Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show, Steve. It should be a good one.
Thanks for having me, Steven.
Double X, anytime, man.
Christopher Mad Dog Russo here. You are listening to Steven Strom on TalkNorth.com.
Always passionate, always fiery. You're listening to the Strom Sports Show. Take it away, Steven.
Great to have you in here. Friday, Strom Sports Show episode 151 on the great TalkNorth.com on this 18th day of June. We've got a special guest for you today, and I'll introduce him in just a second here. But we'll have Matthew Collar, a Purple Insider. He will join us in just a few minutes here. We'll talk everything that's been an absolute busy week with the Minnesota Vikings. Danielle Hunter, he gets his money. You have Sheldon Richardson coming in back from Cleveland into Minnesota. So we've got a lot of great things to get into as far as the Vikings go with Matthew Collar. But today is a special day. It's a Father's Day special here on the Strom Sports Show. And as you know, Sunday is Father's Day. And I thought that it would be nice to bring my dad on, and I'll try not to bloviate on here too much. My dad is with me today. He's on the line or Zoom or whatever you want to call it. But you guys sort of know he's played an eminent role in my sports life and is the reason why I'm so fervent about Minnesota sports. So without further ado, he's on the other end here. Dad, Steve Strom, whatever you want to call him today, it is great to have you on. How are you doing?
Very nice to be here. I'm doing well. This is really fun for me. Talk about our live sports experiences together. We've had a few of them, some of them pretty good, some of them not so good, but cool.
Yeah, and again, we're going to get into Matthew Collar, but today we're going to do this, again, this the theme today is father-son, so we're going to do a couple things here before Collar comes on. We're going to start off here with our favorite sports moment, because that's the beauty of sports. I just, especially for a father and son, it brings people together, right? It brings relationships together, and for me and my dad, like, sports is everything. I mean, that is everything for us. And I wanted to share a couple of stories, and I'm sure the listeners have their stories. But let's start off with you, your dad, Dallas, my grandfather. Tell me what your first memory, I guess, or favorite moment of a live sporting event with your dad.
Yeah, this was really fun for me to go back and try to think about what was the number one time that we had together. But I'll take you back to December 21st of 1976. I was 10 years old, living in Milwaukee, huge Gopher basketball fan, and the Gophers had come to Milwaukee to play the Marquette Warriors. Now, the Warriors that
year. The Warriors.
Yes, it was the Warriors, not the Golden Eagles.
Golden Eagles.
But anyway, we didn't have tickets, of course. Marquette was very good, and I'm going to make an argument today that that was the best Gopher basketball team we've ever had, and I've got to good things to say about that. But anyway, so we were at the will call window. We didn't have tickets and we were freezing. And now my dad, you know, my dad, he was 6'5". So I'm standing next to him and we're trying to get tickets. And this guy walks up to us and he says, do you guys have tickets and will call? And my dad said, no. And he said, well, here's two tickets. Enjoy the game. Never forget it.
You never told me this story.
I never saw that guy ever again. I don't know who he was. I just know that at that moment, when my dad said, thank you, we were in the game and we didn't have to pay for them. And this really goes to, if you do something like that for someone, you never forget it. And I never forgot it. So we get to the game, we're in the game now. And I just want to tell you who was on our team, cause you'll know some of these names. Okay. This is the 1976-77 team. Jim Dutcher was the coach.
Jim Dutcher.
Our center was Michael Thompson, father of Clay Thompson, two-time NBA champion with the Lakers, the number one pick in the 1978 draft of the Portland Trail Blazers. Our guard was Ray Williams.
Okay.
Nifty, great shooter, slasher. Another number one round pick, 10th overall to the Knicks. Okay. Our other forward was a freshman. His name happened to be Kevin McHale. He was the number three pick in the 1980 draft, the Celtics. That's three out of five players that were drafted in the first round. Okay. Our point guard was a guy named Flip Saunders, who ran the show, right?
What a team.
And then our other guard was Osborne Lockhart, who went on to play with the Harlem Globetrotters for 17. That faced the Marquette Warriors, the eventual NCAA champions that year under Al McGuire. They had guys like Butch Lee, Bo Ellis. You don't know these guys. Jerome Whitehead. They had a great team, but they won it all. They beat North Carolina in the finals in 1977. And they asked Al McGuire afterward, are you the best team in the country? And he said, the only team that might be better than us is Minnesota. Now, we had sanctions against us.
I remember this. That's the year. Okay.
Yep. Michael Thompson was selling his tickets to other students and got caught. Now, that wasn't the only thing. Bill Musselman got into trouble too, but we didn't get to participate in the big dance. But overall, we were 24-3 that year, 15-3 in the Big Ten. And I'll never forget that night, but forget all that. Just being there with my dad, and we were hammering the Warriors. We were up 24 points at a certain point during the game. We were killing them. They came back. The final score was 66-59 Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We won the game, but it was just that moment of watching and seeing those players. And I never realized that the talent that that team had. And that's pretty amazing.
It's so funny that, like, and this is another reason why I wanted to bring you on, because it's so, like, podcast, I have like a younger audience. I also have an older audience. I just thought it would be cool to combine the two, because you don't get this from me. Like, and I think it's so funny that I recognize these names by their sons. Like, you talked about Bill Musselman. I know Eric Musselman.
Yes.
He's at Arkansas right now. Like, that's my only. And then same thing with I knew Michael Thompson because we've talked about it before, but Michael Thompson, the first correlation I go is Klay Thompson. So I think it's so funny that that's how we sort of relate in these situations.
And he's got another son that plays for the Arizona Diamondbacks, plays baseball.
That's really,
so that, yeah. Tayshaun Thompson. He's a very athletic family, very great athletic family. And, you know, it's just interesting to see. I mean, Flip Saunders, we love Flip, you know, we know Ryan, but we love Flip. And, you know, Dad, you know, to
what
think
a team.
Of,
what, a, yeah. What a team. Holy buckets. That's three number one picks on a team. I don't know if that's ever going to happen again, to be completely honest, unless Ben Johnson figures some stuff out over at the University of Minnesota. But that's a great story. And I love that you're right. Like, that, it does come full circle. And yeah. I'm sure, you know, eventually, I don't know, maybe that happens to you again. Maybe you give I'm sure you've given out tickets before, but you know, and not in that, I guess, dramatic situation.
Well, you know, it all becomes so romantic and you wax poetic, but I will never forget the moment that guy handed those two tickets to my dad. And we didn't know we were going to get in. That was a big game. I mean, Minnesota was a good team. That was a great team. And it was at the Mecca, so it wasn't a big arena. But just that moment, I'll never forget. And the game itself was outstanding. Ray Williams had a great game. I could not find the box score for this game. And I was frustrated.
Really? No basketball reference?
I couldn't find it. I looked to give me the roster, give me the, you know, the schedule, but it wouldn't give me the box score. So if you can find that, I'd like to see that. But
we'll just believe you off word of mouth. I mean, if you tell me Ray Williams shot the ball well, then hey, I believe you.
Just keep in mind one thing. My favorite live events were when you were on the court. Those are always going to be, and we were both at those events, so that kind of counts.
That's a good one.
And if you want to know my favorite moment in your basketball career, it would be JP Stevens in the fourth quarter where you took the game over. It was unbelievable. You guys had played a lousy game. You were losing. You took over the game, hit a three, drove to the basket, and won. That was a great moment.
I'm basking in this.
And you had to win that game. So that was fun.
That's a really good point, because people know that I goof around sometimes and I use my college card. You know, I'm a NARP now, a non-athletic regular person, ever since I stopped playing basketball. So I love that you brought that up. And that's such a good point, because it is weird to think, like, you know, that I did play college basketball. I did play high school. And that is a really good point. I love that you brought that to the table about a live sporting event. And I don't want to make this about me in particular in my playing career, but that was a really good point. I'll go here. I'll speak for the both of us. Actually, we can share that together. We can kind of bounce off each other on, I know the one that is number one, but I wanted to add this one. One of my favorite sporting events that we went to, and we've gone to a ton.
Yeah,
we've had
yeah.
weekends, we've had games, and I've been internally blessed that you have brought me to these games. I want to bring this one up though. And let me just pull it up. We went to a game and we lived out here in New York, me and my dad. And we would always go to the Twins and the Yankee games. Unfortunately, we would always go in the Twins. When I tell you, we knew something was up when they kept losing, but now it's just starting to hit the surface about the records. You know, the Twins are like 37-102 against the Yankees since 2004. So translation, ever
brutal.
Since Steven and Dad started going to the games, they haven't won a game. So back in 2012, okay. Now, again, this we've been going for years now. My dad looks at me and he's like, you know, you want to go to this game, whatever. We don't even consider any competitive emotion in this game. We just go to just have fun, because that's how bad it has become between the Twins and the Yankees. So we get there and he had great seats. I think it was his company seats or whatever it may be. We had like free entry to like food and stuff like that. So we get to the game and the Twins score 4 runs in the first inning. Do you remember this game? The Twins
score
runs in the first game. And then I thought to myself, we were looking at each other. We were with our hot dogs in one hand, peanuts in the other. We're sitting there, clinching, all this kind of stuff. We think that this time is different. Okay. So it's 4-0. And I looked at the box score at the end of this game because I remember who went off. And it was Curtis Granderson. He had 3 home runs en route to a 5-for-5 game with 4 RBIs. And the Yankees beat us 7-6. And I was like, it just, you score 4 runs the first thing, you got to win that game. And it's just so funny that it just didn't matter. And it almost was good that we went there. It was never about win or losing. We just love to be together. We love to share that event. And baseball is especially a romantic game. That is the father-son tradition, right? Like getting a hot dog, getting peanuts, sitting in your chair, watching a game, soaking in the sun. And I don't think it was in April, so it was kind of cold here. But it was so much more than just wins and losses. And it had to be with the Yankees and the Twins because we never won. So I just specifically remember that. And us just kind of throwing our hands up and saying, that's the Twins.
Yep. And I remember those home runs that he hit were right over our head because we were on the first base side behind the first, right, kind of equal to where the first base sits. And those home runs were all going right. We just watched them fly into the seats.
The short porch in right field. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, it's very short. It's very short. But
I want to sneak this in, though.
Go.
I think it's important to note, too, that for a stretch when you played for Kane University, you had a stretch where you started and you were on fire. Now high school is different, right, than college. But you were on fire for that. That moment in time was so fun for me, too.
Yeah.
But, yes, you're right about baseball. And if I go back to my dad and I think about going to the Brewers Twins, and we were always in somebody else's park. I never got to see a game because I didn't live in Minneapolis that long. I went back and lived there. But I remember Rod Carew, a great, great hitter for the Twins. Someone from Milwaukee said, hey, Rod, teach these guys in Milwaukee how to bunt. He's a great bunter.
Oh, that's a good story. Yeah.
First leading off the game, he lays a bunt down the third baseline. One of those that just stops rolling where the third baseman picks it up and throws it to the pitcher. It was so cool to see that. He was like an artist with the bat. But those games, and again, we didn't have money. So my dad was like, okay, in the fifth inning, we'll have a hot dog and a soda, right? Because we so it was totally different experience. But it was just him and I talking baseball. And it's different. We had it when we would see the Twins and the Yankees, but it was just the field perfect, just different.
There's so much more downtime in baseball. It's such a more of an intimate experience. We can look over to each other and, Kyle Gibson could be down 3-0 on a count. We're just kind of BSing. But when we're at, and here's the next event, and then we got to get this to, I want to get to the Mount Rushmore of my athletes and yours. Okay. Yeah. And we got to get this going. But that leads me to my next point, because there was no intimate talk. There was no, it was all guts. It was all glory. And it was all screaming in 2009 when this is your best day. You figured out a way to get tickets to the Brett Favre against the Green Bay Packers 2009 Monday Night Football Metrodome. The greatest game that any of us have been to. The greatest game. I'll let you take it from here. There was moments where I actually told you, I said, I can't. Like, my ears are shattering. Like, you need to give me a time here.
Yeah.
That was the best game I've ever been to. And I'll never forget how loud it was in the Metrodome.
People throw the word electric around a lot. We walked into that stadium. There was like an era in the air. The air was just, it was an amazing experience. And then remember all the Twins baseball players came, they had a game and they came to the Metrodome. So they were all on the field. Right.
And remember really quickly, folks, the Twins were in a battle with the Royals. We actually went to those games too that weekend. That's for another time. But the Twins came all the way back, beat the Tigers in game 163. You may continue.
Yeah, unbelievable weekend. And, we saw the Gophers lose to Wisconsin in football, but it was a good game. But anyway, that moment that night, and that was the most watched game ever on Monday Night Football for ESPN, that far. Just watching that game and how it transpired, we knew at the end of that game there was going to be a problem between Favre and Chile. Yep. We knew it. But we also saw the greatness of Favre and also the recklessness of Favre. Instead of running out the clock at the end of the game, he's throwing, 40-yard bombs to Sidney Rice and incomplete stops the clock, right? So we knew we were in for a ride with Favre. But that night, Jared Allen just took over that game.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Rodgers, I think, 4 times. Peterson was fantastic, although he did fumble. Remember, Matthews stripped him of the ball, and I think in the second quarter ran it the other way. So yep. the game was It was a good game, but we knew we had something. And I remember you running up the steps going, I can't hear myself think. You could not talk to one another. It was just crazy. And I also remember the Packer fans, you know, shooting their mouths off, you know, it just doesn't mean anything. That was nice to give them a facial. It was nice to be in our home park. Correct. That was nice.
That was the biggest thing for me because, again, being out here in New York, we never got that. We always looked around. We were always the only ones wearing our jerseys, and it was just – it stunk. So to share that moment in that type of environment, I remember when we left, when you open up the Metrodome doors, like the wind or whatever you want to call it, you know what I'm talking about, right? Oh, or if you can explain it better, I don't know how I'm explaining it.
So you just swing those revolving doors.
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah. You get them like pushed out. There was an extra push that night because, again, we went to like two or three of the Royals Twins games in that series, and it was loud. Like, don't get me wrong, but that game was just next level. So I hope you guys like that. That, you know, those are some of my favorite moments and my dad's. And again, I think anyone listening here that has a relationship with their father has shared these moments. And I hope that maybe we made you think about yours. So again, here, my dad's joining me on a Father's Day special. Father's Day is Sunday. It's great to have him on today. And we're going to have Matthew Collar in just a few minutes here. But I wanted to do our new versus young, old versus young, whatever you want to call it. And my dad is not old. He looks great. I want to hear your Mount Rushmore of Minnesota athletes. You're born in 65. I was born in 98. We're going to have different ones.
Yep.
But I think for the audience that lean towards your age a little bit more, they will be like, yeah, this guy's right. So let's hear yours first.
Okay, let's do hockey first. We're going to do the North Stars. And one of the greatest players to ever come out of the state of Minnesota is Neil Broughton. He also had two brothers. And I knew Paul Broughton. He played for the Rangers. But Neil was our guy. He went to the University of Minnesota, won an NCAA championship under Herb Brooks, drafted by the North Stars, took us to a cup final, was on the 1980 Olympic champion, you know, gold medal winning team against the Soviet Union at that time. And then he went on and finished his career with the Devils and won a cup with the New Jersey Devils and Jacques Lemaire in 1995. So Neil Broughton, represents the state of Minnesota when it comes to hockey. And he's my hero. He's a great player for the North Stars, a great player, great facilitator, great skater, nifty player. So that's my guy for hockey.
Okay.
You want to go years or do you want me to just do all four of mine?
Rip off your four. Yep. Rip off your four.
Twins. There's nobody you can't even, I don't know if anyone can even question this. Kirby Puckett came here and changed the landscape of the Twins. We won two World Series. I was outside of the Metrodome in 91. I was outside of the Metrodome in 87. I didn't have tickets, but I was right there listening. And I was wild. But anyway, Puckett brought this team to a championship level. He willed this team to win. Game six of the 1991 World Series, he makes the catch and wins it in extras with a home run, a walk-off, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
Yep.
Kirby is Minnesota. As great as Joe Mauer was for a while and some of these other guys, Morneau.
That's fair.
Johan Santana, Puckett is still number one. As far as the Timberwolves go, this is where we're both going to share the same guy, I think. Mm-hmm. Kevin, 95, I'm at the Mall of America during the draft with all my buddies. And here's our pick. Number five in the draft, Kevin Garnett, changed the Wolves. They never gave him the help he needed, but he's a champion. And you and I both cheered
hard. We became Celtic fans when he left. Yep.
Yep. And we were very excited for him. And then finally, the Vikings. I can go back to Chuck Foreman. He was my first favorite player.
This is interesting. I'm looking forward to hearing this Viking one for you.
Yeah. Well, but I have to, and I fought with this one. But he changed what we were immediately, and that's Moss in 98. He just came here. No one knew what to expect. Defenses changed, right? The Packers, the Bears, and Detroit started drafting cornerbacks, okay? They couldn't cover this man, and he was great. Now, he came with some baggage. Everybody loves him now. He's really done well.
He's revamped his career off the field just from a personal standpoint. Yep.
But he did change it. He did take us 98. We went to a championship game. I'm not talking about that. We played the Giants. I don't want to talk about that. But he did bring us to a different level where we were back in the Super Bowl conversation. And it started with Moss in 98. That is a real tough one for me because there's a lot of great players from Fran Tarkington to Chuck Foreman to just a lot, Adrian Peterson. I mean, there's so many great guys. And then you go back to and the Purple People Eaters. I remember those guys. My first jersey I ever bought as a kid was number 88, Alan Page. That's the jersey I wanted to wear. So there's some great Viking players. There are some great Viking teams. No Super Bowl still stings. Hope we get there. But Moss has got to be number one for me.
So Neil Broughton, Randy Moss, Kirby Puckett, and Kevin Garnett. That is his, my dad's, Mount Rushmore of his Minnesota athletes. I'll share mine really quickly, and then we'll have Matthew Collar. First one for me is unequivocally Adrian Peterson. Came into the league, Oklahoma, completely changed. That's where really I thought that my love for football and the Vikings in particular went through the roof. Remember when he went for 296 against the Chargers? Just remember his rookie year. He wasn't even playing in the beginning. Chile was playing Chester Taylor. And it was like, what are we doing? And then, you know, it's almost like the Justin Jefferson test. That's what I'm going to call it. You watch him one snap and he gets the ball. You look over to whoever you're watching with and saying, this kid can play. Yep. It's the same thing with Adrian Peterson. He's number one. Sucks that he never got that Super Bowl. A lot of moments where he fumbled in big games. I don't want to let that overshadow the totality of his career because he had one of the greatest seasons that I've seen, not from a football standpoint, a sports standpoint, tearing his ACL, coming back in 2012, running for 2,000 yards, willing that team to victory with Christian Ponder and Joe Webb. He should get a trophy just for making the playoffs with those two clowns at quarterback. That was an amazing season. Adrian Peterson's number one. Number two, another guy I fell in love with, Joe Mauer, wore number 7 playing baseball, was a catcher, tried to emulate him. It always bothered me that I wasn't a lefty. I looked at his batting stance, couldn't figure it out because I wasn't a lefty. Loved everything he stood for in Minnesota. Humble guy, staying out of trouble. I still would have paid him. I still don't regret it. Same thing with Parisian Suter. I still don't regret it. But Joe Mauer checks in at number 2, MVP in 2009. It felt like a victory for me and my dad out here, being able to pump our chest about the small town team that won an MVP. Number 3, Justin Morneau. I was a huge Twins guy. My dad knows it. We would watch the games late. When Jim Suhan wrote, my boss, an article about my dad letting me stay up late to watch the games, we had some comments about that. People didn't like that. But Justin Morneau checks in number 33. Again, those two guys I just loved. I love those two guys. And then I would say number 4, I had a toss up between the two, is either Garnett or Moss. I don't remember a lot about Garnett though. That was the only thing that I struggled with because he left so early. Mm-hmm. He left in 2007. I mean, it's hard for me to say that I was a huge fan at age 9. I remember it, but I can't sit here and totally say with certainty that he was my guy. So I'm going to go with Randy Moss, who, like my dad talked about, he changed the game. You went outside. Me and my dad would go outside and play catch. I would say, throw it up. I want to Moss it. I want to go with one hand. He completely changed the way I think number one defense is. Tony Dungy against Tampa. I remember he kind of changed the way defenses were with the cover 2. Yep. And then again, just the fact that I go outside sometimes and someone will make a big catch and the first thing they say is, oh, you got mossed. That carries weight. Like, that's cool to me. But both football guys never got it done. I guess all 4 of these guys never got it done. So I got to get a better list with more championships, but haven't seen one. So that's entirely up to them.
Fair enough.
Finish up. We got to say, Dad.
No, I was just going to say, you're right. We haven't had a lot of champions. Kirby Puckett is one that, you know, and it's not just Puckett. There's a lot of guys, but 87 and 91 for a small town, small market team, or I guess medium market team, to win 2 World Series in 4 years was pretty special.
It was pretty special. All right, we're going to get to Matthew Collar here, getting your Vikings fix for today. Stick with us here. Matthew Collar, he's up next. All right, Matthew Collar, Purple Insider. He's with us right now with my dad and I. We're talking Vikings football. He's at training camp right now, giving us a nice view. I don't know. The audience might be able to see this, but Matt, man, I appreciate you joining us today. How's everything going?
Oh, everything is good. And I wish your dad, Steve, a happy Father's Day. So, you know, I mean, I guess I should wish my own dad the same thing, but this is very cool of you to do this together.
For sure.
Thanks. Hate that. For sure.
And we're going to go back and forth here. I'll start with the first question. As we talked about before, this is we're doing a Father's Day special podcast. We're doing this thing for Sunday. Let's just first here, just forget Vikings talk. Give me the first memory of a live sporting event or anything that really connected you and your pops as far as a sporting event it goes.
Well, I would say that my dad was my little league coach, and you know, that's quite an experience. And if anybody's ever had that, they know that, you know, usually dad is toughest on his own kid when it comes to coaching. So he had some of that, but had a lot of fun having him as the little league coach. So that was probably the first kind of sports connection that we had. And then my first Major League Baseball game that I ever went to was in Toronto. It was the New York Yankees, Toronto Blue Jays, and shows my age that, you know, Derek Jeter was very early in his career at that time. The Yankees were just starting to win World Series. And that was really cool to go to a Major League Baseball game, you know, because when you're playing Little League, your dad's coaching, and then you go to a ball game together. I mean, it's kind of classic Americana father-son stuff. So that was definitely the first. And my dad has been incredibly supportive, as your dad is, Stephen, you know, along the way for my career as well, which has meant a lot to me.
We were talking about before how baseball is a lot more intimate than any other sport. You have pitches in between that you look over and you just kind of take in the moment. Whereas like football games, you're intense, you know, as a kid, you're going there. So that's a great story, I think, to share here again on a Father's Day special. We'll throw it to you, man. Dad, let's start off. What kind of questions do we have for Vikings?
Well, I would like to ask what he feels. What's the status of the offensive line? I mean, every year it seems to be an issue. We draft players. It was not very good last year. We're a run first team, a play action team, kind of old school. We've got a quarterback that doesn't move around very well. What do you think of that offensive line and these guys that are coming in? Is this going to be an improved offensive line? Are we going to have the same issues that we had last year and in previous years?
Well, Steve, that's a great question. And Mike Zimmer actually just talked about that this morning on his Zoom call, where he talked about wanting to protect Kirk Cousins from the interior pressure, where he's been so susceptible of it over the last couple of years. And that's one of the reasons that they drafted Wyatt Davis. And I think it's one of the reasons that they wanted Ezra Cleveland to stay at guard, because he's a bigger guy and he's a good pass protector. He had some tough times last year, as any rookie would, switching positions. But I think that that's a huge improvement potentially over what they've had in the past few years, where they've just sort of tried to duct tape and glue it together. And I think what they've shown through the draft, especially the last 2 years, is a big commitment to getting the most talented players they can in the draft on the offensive line, with Ezra Cleveland, Christian Darrisaw, and Wyatt Davis. So I think they've taken the right process to improve that pass protection. My only question is just how well the rookies can play right away, because historically, rookie guards, rookie left tackles, I mean, those are tough. Yeah, they're very tough. And, you know, last year, there were a couple of guys who stepped in right away, Jedrick Wills and Tristan Wirfs, who played pretty well. So it's not impossible to do it, but historically more guys struggle in their first years than succeed. And so if that's the case, you know, they could have, you know, some bumps along the way. But I also think if you look at the guys they've been running out there at guard, it almost can't be worse, right? Like, even if there are a lot of rookie moments, I mean, we're talking about their guard play. By any metric you look at, for Pro Football Focus, pressures, grades, whatever, their guard play has been the worst in the NFL over the last 3 years. I think that would match up with anyone's eye test. So even just by proxy of having more talented players, even if they struggle at times, I think it will be improved, maybe by a good bit, if Wyatt Davis and Ezra Cleveland play well.
And I feel the same way about the secondary too. Like, people, I think at the beginning were like, oh, Pat Pete, he's getting older. Some of these guys, you know, Mackenzie Alexander, you got to compare it to last year. I mean, anything really is an upgrade, as you kind of alluded to. Like, this team, and we go back and we think, like, there was a couple of games, like the Seattle game, the Tennessee game, they probably should have won those games. And hopefully that gets flip-flopped this year. We'll do Hunter in a second here, but I wanted to stick with what he was talking about on the offensive line. And offensively, Gary Kubiak passing the torch to Clint. I'm sure the offense is going to look similar, but can you kind of give us a feel for what differences we might see in, you know, we see the younger coaches maybe go a little bit more aerial, whatever it may be. What are some of the things that we should expect from Clint Kubiak?
Yeah, I don't think that the fundamentals of the offense are going to change. I don't think that Mike Zimmer's edict to run Dalvin Cook all the time is going to change. But I think that what you might have with Clint Kubiak, especially knowing that he was close with Kevin Stefanski, is running an offensive scheme that does work around the league. It's worked really well for Tennessee. It's worked really well for San Francisco. Even Matt LaFleur in Green Bay is running a version of a Shanahan or Kubiak style offense. So this is succeeding in the NFL, but you have to modernize it a little bit more, I think, than Gary Kubiak did last year. So that means maybe throwing a little bit more on second down and on first down than they did last year, adjusting the run pass ratio a little bit for those situations, and then just adding some of the twists that NFL offenses are currently having a lot of success with. I mean, motion is one that it seems like nobody's quite figured out how to deal with yet. You know, NFL defensive coordinators are really good at adapting, and yet, you know, using a lot of motion is correlating to success. I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? If you're moving a bunch of bodies around before the snap.
Kyle Shanahan does a fantastic job of doing that, by the way.
Yep, exactly. It's harder for the defense to lock in. The other thing is, too, I was kind of looking at some of their short passing game from last year. And, you know, Kirk Cousins was successful in the short passing game. They just didn't use it a whole lot. And I think that there is opportunities there. So, you know, if you want to throw Justin Jefferson a pass that's quick, I mean, the guy can run with it, right? So I think that they need to improve in those areas. And it's possible that Clint Kubiak will be able to do that. There is also the part, though, is he's a first-time play caller. So this is one of the things we're going to be watching the entire, you know, first portion of the season is just how he adapts to calling plays for the first time.
Yeah, and I'd like to see Irv Smith a little bit more. I'd like to see him go to the tight end. They've got good tight ends. I mean, I know they lost Rudolph, but I agree with you. I'd like to see some quick routes, some quick, you know, play action to the tight end. It makes a lot of sense for this team because they're good players. The tight ends are very good.
You know, that's a good point, Steve. And one of the things that I noticed the other day, just looking at some statistics on Irv Smith, was that he was in, I think, maybe the top 7 or 8 in the league in yards per catch for tight ends last year. And that's the big difference between him and Kyle Rudolph, that now with him taking over that tight end one role, he has an opportunity to go down the field. And I mean, Vikings fans have not seen a down the field tight end since what? I mean, Steve Janko. Jordan, I guess. Would that be it? Right. Like, I mean, it has been a long time. And I think that that's really Irv's specialty. And I apologize. There's a plane going over me here. If you can't hear me for a second, but I think that when we're talking about what could be different, I mean, improved pass protection, a little more creativity, a little more passing on early downs, and then working the tight end position down the field. And I think even Tyler Conklin is capable of that. All of those things, I think in order to get some of the same results, they have to be a little bit better than they were last year. You know, I thought that some of the statistics were a little skewed, playing from behind a lot. We saw last year playing against some bad defenses. I think they've got a tougher slate this year. So they're going to have to improve those things to get a lot of the same results.
All right, Danielle Hunter, what a sigh of relief to have him back in camp and reporting. And as much as we all sitting here saying, oh, we want Danielle Hunter to come, you know, we're not. And then we have the thing going on with Green Bay, but we're finally, I feel like we're out of the woods here. We don't have to worry about that. We'll let Green Bay handle the Rodgers thing. We've got our guy in Hunter. Is this just a classic case of, okay, we'll pay you up front here with the $5 million, but we're going to see what happens next year? What was sort of your reaction to this?
Yeah, my reaction was that, you know, Danielle Hunter clearly has a lot of loyalty to this franchise because he could have played this out and played much more hardball throughout training camp. And to sign now, I don't think this is necessarily a great deal for his side. I mean, he gets a little more cash in his pocket, a little more guaranteed now, and then he has an opportunity after next year to sign a huge contract extension, the one that it was reported that he wanted now. But I think, you know, when you look at the defensive line and how important he is to it, I think he could have held their feet to the fire more. And I think it just says something about how these defensive players have felt about this franchise. I mean, we look at Sheldon Richardson coming back, Mackenzie Alexander coming back. That seems to be a trend of guys wanting to stick around. Anthony Barr nearly signed with the Jets a couple years ago. He decides to stay with the Vikings. I mean, there's clearly something here that these guys want to take deals for a little less or want to work things out and find middle ground. So I think that helps. I also think that the Vikings are reasonable about these things, that if they played ridiculous hardball with a guy who was massively underpaid in Danielle Hunter, then they would have just been hurting themselves. So I think it was good for them to find some middle ground and say, look, if you come in here and you have another great season and your neck is fine after the injury last year, you're going to get the huge contract that you deserve and that you've earned over the first few years of your career. And so from that perspective, it's just, I think, fair all around. From the on-field, I mean, they desperately need Danielle Hunter. Without him, you would have been talking about Steven Weatherly, DJ Wanham, a bunch of unproven guys, draft picks. That's not what they want in a season where they've signed so many players on the defensive side to try, you know, to fix this defense from where it was last year.
Minnesota ranked 27th in yards per game, allowed 393 yards per game, which was 29th, and then giving up 29 points per game. I mean, Zimmer went out and he addressed what needed to be done. And just some of the other numbers, like last year, they gave up 53 touchdowns compared to one of the best years, 24 back in 2017. It's crazy how bad this defense was historically. We got two more left here. I'll throw it to you, Dad.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, it was the perfect storm last year. We had no pass rush and young corners. So here we've left these young guys that really don't know how to play yet exposed. And yeah, I mean, it was just the terrible combination of why this defense was just awful. This is almost like they've got four or five blue chip players back in the mix. I mean, they didn't have Kendricks. They didn't have Barr. They didn't have Pierce. All those guys coming back. Adding Peterson. I mean, this is a this should be a very solid top 10 defense, I think. If these guys perform to the level where they have in the past, this should be a top 10 defense this year.
Yeah, Steven, I think it's fine to set the expectation there. I mean, when they've spent this much money on the defensive side and they've made this full commitment to a lot of guys on, honestly, short-term deals. I mean, to keep Anthony Barr, they had to reduce his deal to make sure he's a free agent after this year. Patrick Peterson, a one-year deal. Bashaud Breeland, one-year deal. Same with Mackenzie Alexander. So they've kind of pushed the chips to the middle of the table here. Same with the Sheldon Richardson contract and said, you know, this defense might not be together for more than this year, but we need to get it fixed this year because I do believe there's a lot of pressure on Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman to win. And so now it kind of takes all the excuses off the table. Like last year, there were, you know, I guess excuses and explanations. I mean, they made some of their own bed with the lack of depth, the draft picks that did not work out. They didn't sign guys to short-term deals last year to fix problems that maybe they could have seen coming. So they've adjusted their process this year, I think, in the right way. But it also says, you know, fans are going to be back in the stands, so you're going to get your home field advantage back. Like, everything is kind of set up for you. Now is the hard part. You have to go win because you can't go back and say, oh, well, it was this or it was that. You were given everything you need, and now if you can't get to the playoffs, if you can't get deeper in the playoffs than you've been before – well, then maybe you do start talking about making changes because everything has been given to you on both sides of the ball.
Matthew Collar with us. Last one for you, Purple Insider. Wide receiver 3. We know we have Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson. Who do you think emerges here? I know it's early, but who do you think you hope, I guess, to emerge as that wide receiver 3?
Steven, you're not going to give your dad the last question? Come on, man.
All right.
One more. I'm going to ask one more.
Then ask one more.
Last one. Are we going to find a kicker? Oh, my God. Here we struggle with our kicker. Last year, we lost a couple of games. We played Tampa so tough, the guy missed 5 field goals. Do we have somebody that you think can come in and give us a decent job as a kicker?
Okay, I'll answer both questions for you. The wide receiver three is still wide open. You know, nobody in mandatory minicamp has yet emerged and sort of set themselves apart. We won't really find that one out until – I think the middle of training camp, who's starting to kind of separate themselves, but it's still a little surprising to me. And maybe this could still happen, but surprising to me that you haven't brought in a veteran to kind of hold down that role. But some of their recent veteran signings have been misses. So maybe they'd rather just leave it to the younger guys. As far as a kicker, I think that the kicker for the Minnesota Vikings 2021 is not presently on the roster. They have a guy who's unproven in Greg Joseph, a guy that they picked up as an undrafted free agent, Riley Patterson. I mean, it's hard to see either one of those guys giving them a lot of confidence. I think what we could see is the Vikings waiting until someone gets cut, kind of in Dan Bailey-like fashion, ends up getting cut, and then they pick up that guy because I just wouldn't have a whole lot of confidence. And, man, you know, you're already cursed as hell with Vikings kickers. You don't want to be playing around even more, right?
Yes.
Matthew Collar, you're the best, man. Seriously, thank you again. Purpleinsider.substack.com. Also, check out his book, too, Making of a Miracle, the story behind the Minnesota Vikings' improbable 2017 season with Case Keenum. Thanks again, man. This really means a lot. This was really nice today. Keep up the great work, and it was great that you got to meet my dad and be on here per usual.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Happy Father's Day to you, Steve. I'm going to run up to the practice field. I'll catch you guys later. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening again. Have a fantastic rest of your day and weekend. Make sure to tell your dad Happy Father's Day. Take him out. I'm so glad I got to share with you my dad today and just to kind of get a feel for where I got this passion from, all of that good stuff. We will talk to you next Friday here on the Strom Sports Show. For Steven Strom, have a fantastic rest of your day.